Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Hello, I'm Bates, Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's my Weber on the board. We're also Mr. Brendan Carnan. SP Futures down 37, second lousy day here so far. And NASDAQ Futures down 64, down on 394 individual stocks. Good. Coke is actually up 35 cents and earnings that were better than people thought.
Is that just from you stocking up on 2 liters?
Oh, God. Volume off 25%.
I think that's pretty easy to understand with everybody staying at home. They're all going to drink more Coke. They need more rum, too. Bacardi's probably doing very well.
Well, the volume's off 25%, so.
Bacardi and Coke. I haven't had that in a long time.
For a very long period of time, back in the day, I'm going to say back, we got a lot of stuff to talk about this morning, but. See if you can follow this, Maddie. It's maybe before Maddie, but I'm going to say in the 80s, the best selling booze was Bacardi. It was the highest selling hard liquor. And it went from there to Absolute and for like another decade or two, and now we've been in the Browns for a while. Browns
and
being the whiskey.
And Tito's has taken over as the vodka of choice.
Right. But but vodka in general is out compared to the highest selling booze. Well, maybe not this last year or two, but for a while it was Jameson.
Yeah, and then Jameson is probably still a very popular shot of choice.
Yes,
but you're right. The booze flavors absolutely rotate in and out of style, which is very interesting.
Well, I mean, you're
and then everyone kind of follows the another. Moscow Mules came back for a little bit,
yep.
And they were very popular, and now they've kind of gone away again.
Well, your Bacardi and Coke was pretty darn sweet.
Oh yeah, and for a while people were drinking Captain and Cokes, Captain Morgan Coke, which is also just sweet and just terrible. But people love that.
We used to drink buckets of fun over at the Excelsior. So what's a bucket of fun?
I don't know if I want to know.
Myers rum and OJ.
You're drinking those in the morning.
No, we had those. We were having those after board meetings. But I tell you what.
Sometimes it doesn't matter, Matty.
Of course, at the Excelsior, I challenge you to find the little puddle of orange juice in there.
Right. It's 90% rum, right?
Yeah. The best
of course, you know, that's the kind of stuff that got Eddie Johnson in trouble. It wasn't at the Excelsior, though. It was
no.
Over at Ceres.
Yeah. Well, of course, he was elsewhere afterwards. He didn't just go home afterwards.
And maybe before.
And maybe before.
And maybe before.
Because they close at 8. Yeah. He was found at 12:30. So.
Yep.
The best drink ever, I think, was the something in Arizona they call the Sun Devil Layback, which was a half a shot of light rum, half a shot of medium rum, half a shot of dark rum, half a shot of 151 rum. You fill the rest of the glass with a combination of pineapple and OJ, which is pretty tasty. And on top, you put a
shot. How big was the glass that you're getting?
It was pretty big glass. And on the top,
high umbrellas.
And on the top, they put a shot of creamed almond, which is like.
I can imagine that actually tasted pretty good.
It was really good.
But I don't think you could. I mean, what would you get halfway through that and you couldn't finish it? Rich drink.
We did a bunch. I used to make them down at. We used to rent this house down in Michigan City. You bring all the ladies down there. If ever you wanted to. Put the ladies to sleep in the afternoon, just right where they were, make them like two of those. And I'd go cook, and I'd have nobody complaining at all. I'd just cook, and everybody was silent. It was nice. They'd wake up and say they're hungry, you know. Anyway, bad stuff going on, Brendan. No way to sugarcoat it. But we do have to talk a little bit, and I'll talk a bit more later. But this oil situation. Boy, I don't usually get a whole lot of phone calls, but yesterday I did this. Everybody wants to buy oil down here thinking they can actually buy. For those that haven't heard, and I'm sure everybody's heard, at some point yesterday, the May future in oil traded like minus 38 bucks or something. Minus. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to keep this very, very brief because it's early. But when you, two things. One is if you have an option contract, okay, the buyer controls. So if I buy a call option at IBM, I get to buy IBM at whatever price that contract says. If I buy the June 160s, I get to buy IBM at 160 from whoever sold it to me anytime between now and June expiration. Okay, that's pretty simple. But don't think for a second that futures contracts are the same way. They're just different, and there's reasons for that. I'll just be real simple with this, and when I start this, I'll say I don't really know the vagaries of the oil situation in Oklahoma, where the delivery point is, Cushing, because there's something odd going on there that I don't know why this thing went this far negative, but it did. Okay, but let me just explain how the futures are different. Okay, now if you're a farmer somewhere and you're growing corn, you've got your corn, okay, and then there's this place that says, okay, we're going to futures contract on corn. It could be the local. Matter of fact, Lehman Brothers got started making futures contracts in cotton in the South back in the 1800s. And so you don't have to have an exchange to have a futures contract, okay? You can have the guy who is your, what do they call the guy that, the co-op guy, he can give you a futures contract. People can. All right, so say you have an exchange-traded contract. You've got the corn, and you put your corn on the ground, and some of the futures are trading for $4. You sell the futures contract at $4. All right, so the idea is at the end of the year, that futures contract is going to come and match the spot contract, the spot being the cash contract, okay, for the actual corn at a place. But now two things. It's not corn on your farm. It's corn at a delivery point. But it's not just corn at a delivery point. It's corn that's in the bins, has been already tested, has been graded, how many bugs are in it, you name it. It's there at during the right time, right, Brendan? It's not just on your farm. It's not just, oops, the prices don't match, I'll be there in a week, here comes my truck. No, that's not the way it works. There has to be, Chicago used to be a delivery point. When you go down the Chicago River, normally do we see all the silos and so forth, those used to be delivery points. Chicago's no longer a delivery point. It's Marseille. Is it still Buffalo, Brendan? I should look this up. But there's like three or four. St. Louis is probably one. New Orleans is probably one. But there are specific delivery points, okay, that you have to have your corn or your soybeans or your wheat or whatever the hell it is. The delivery point for oil for West Texas Intermediate is Cushing, Oklahoma. So you have to get your oil in storage in Cushing, Oklahoma. Now, why does it have to be deliverable? Okay, if you're a farmer and you sell the future at $5, you've got your corn. And the corn, everywhere the corn's worth $4 at all the delivery points, and all of a sudden this futures trade in $8. You say, what the bleep, Batman? Well, how is that working out? This is not a very good contract. They're not matching. Well, at the end of the day, the fallback position is, okay, I'll just give you my corn. If you won't get the price down to where I'll buy the future back at $3.50 and sell my corn here for $3.45 or $3.40 and everybody's happy, I will get my corn where I have to be because then the prices will match. Right, Brendan?
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition. So the thing is designed sort of for the seller to control. All right? Because the seller's the guy that if the prices don't match up, he's the guy who's going to get screwed. So that's the way the thing is designed. Now, obviously, getting all your oil from West Texas to Cushing is a problem. Just like getting your corn from Western Iowa to Marseille is a problem. So what you don't want to have happen, you really don't want a lot of deliveries. So one of the things that the exchanges do, the Board of Trade I'm more familiar with, is they actually track. There's a day when everybody will roll like to the next month on the futures. If all of a sudden none of the May contracts start coming off the board, they know they have a problem. Okay? You should be liquidating. There's no more reason for you to be short the May future when it's 2 weeks away. Okay? Because you can't get your corn anywhere in 2 weeks. So what you're going to do is you're going to roll to the June, you're going to roll to July or November, wherever it is. So if you don't do that, they know they have a problem. And I'm going to say, Brendan, these guys knew they had a problem a while ago. Because what happens is, when you're, if you're going to corner the market, if you're doing anything nefarious, the way you do it is to control the storage at the delivery points. We saw that happen like 10, 15 years ago. And soybeans or corn, Brendan? It's been so long.
Soybeans.
Soybeans.
I thought it was soybeans.
Yeah, the guys that used to be Central Soya that got bought by the place in Italy. I forget their name all the time. Mm-hmm. They controlled like a huge amount of the storage facilities were in one of the places, so you couldn't get the corn in. The prices weren't matching. And I think at the end of the day, they got spanked real hard by the Board of Trade, Brent. I think they got fined basically up the wazoo. So, because they tried to do it. So somehow, some way, the people who are along these contracts cannot take delivery of this oil. Either there's nothing in storage, or they don't have the money, or the storage rates are too high. Something weird is going on in Cushing. So if I'm sitting there with this long contract, I'm going, I'll just give it to you. Or worse than that, I'll give you $10.
I'll pay you.
I'll pay you to take it. I can't. The delivery is just too onerous for me. Now, why that is, I haven't read yet. I mean, we need when I say a real expert, if you ever watch the beginning Kung Fu episode, every one of these commodities is essentially a lifetime of knowledge. I mean, the corn guy at the Board of Trade usually stayed away from soybeans. Every one of them would say, what do the guy tell Grasshopper? Every style is a lifetime to learn of Kung Fu, basically. I'm going to try and get somebody.
Yes, Grasshopper.
Yes. Or we'd have to call Matty Weedhopper. What do you think? Just saying.
That's not terrible.
No, it's not horrible.
I want to hear that story.
Yeah.
Yesterday was 420.
Yesterday was 420, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's right. But I'm saying that we'll find somebody who knows. But that basically is the lineup, that all of a sudden if you cannot take delivery and you... I mean, what would you and I have done yesterday with a long contract? We can't... If you can't sell it, all of a sudden, someplace, somewhere, you're going to get this warehouse receipt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want it, you can't get it. Then you might just say, I don't want any part of this. They essentially were screwing the longs. Where the way these contracts are designed, they're set up so the long can't screw the short. Basically.
So why do you think that is? I mean, do you think that's because of the oil supply between Russia and Saudi Arabia, between their battle? Do you think it's because of something with the reduced use of oil now with the pandemic here in the United States and around the world, which
yes.
people aren't driving as much?
Yes, yes, and yes. Demand's got to be down 40-50%. Gasoline in Wisconsin is $1.20. I think the entire supply chain, Brendan.
Last week over here in Michigan, it was $1.85 and still dropping.
The entire supply chain is gummed up. And last night I was reading this thing where if you are stuck someplace like the Permian or like Canada, where you're sending your stuff from Canada to, and of course this gets real complicated. It's a huge, not just a show. It's a week to learn this stuff. For instance, just an aside, if you have Canadian oil. It's high viscosity, so it's heavy. It's got sand in it, so it's basically crap. Okay, so for you to send that, you're going to send it through a pipeline. You actually have to keep the pipeline, I think, Brendan, somewhat heated, or the stuff won't flow.
Mm-hmm.
And if the pipeline just stops and it's not flowing, I think you got to cut the stuff out of the pipeline. It's really bizarre. So the guy who actually wins in this mess, if there is a winner. It really isn't the winner, but the minor winner is, if you've got your, say the pipelines to New Orleans from the Permian or someplace are just full. The refineries don't want it. They're not selling it. It's just jammed. Well, you can basically shove that oil in the Permian up your behind, right? But if you've got it in a ship, maybe New Orleans is jammed. Maybe, New Jersey isn't. Maybe someplace else isn't. You actually have flexibility. If you've got the ship at sea, to send the ship wherever there might actually be a refinery that's giving you something for it. But if you
right,
are...
Right, but I understand right now that there are fewer ships available now because of the overflow of oil.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's fewer available, but the good news is nobody wants them, except for storage. Right?
Yes.
I mean, the demand actually, where somebody says, I need a shipload of oil, where's that now? There's all kinds
of... But they're also still producing oil, which is compounding the problem.
Right. Well, I mean, so are we. You can't turn these... Mm-hmm. You're still better off in a lot of... Now, if you do the numbers, you do, now nobody knows how to do this anymore, and I'm so sloppy at it now. If you do variable cost analysis, probably, even if you're talking about a variable cost well, once the well is going, whether it's, I mean, whether it's fracking, whether it's not, if your cost on a day-to-day basis is to bring the oil out of there at $10, maybe you should sell it at $7 for a while and just eat it. Because if you shut the thing down and don't do anything for a month, it might cost you $1 million to bring it back up.
Mm-hmm. And no, that's fine. The big problem right now, and part of what drove the cost down so much yesterday. But to be that dramatic, that dramatically below zero is remarkable.
Well, but you have to understand, I mean, this is the part. Here's what's going on with, I'm going to make you jump here, Maddie, kick me. It's something, it's almost like the virus. Not that the virus isn't serious, it sure as hell is. And we've heard a lot of people that, you know, are in trouble with it, and you know, my hat's off to them, and prayers are for them, and all that good stuff. But the June contract, which is what we care about now, is $22, right? So what happened yesterday is a very minor, esoteric thing that is a function of having pipelines and rail cars and so forth ending up in a place that's now full of oil. It may happen with the June contract, too, or it may happen with the July contract. But the point is, Brandon, it's probably 0.001% of all the oil. I had called somebody, client yesterday. Where can I buy some of this oil at minus $30? You can't. What are you from Mars? You can't do that. Unless you want to be one of the guys with the long contract and is about to be dumped on your front lawn. No. So, I mean, it is an aberration in an expiring month. That, by the way, expires at 2:30 today. So, I mean, it's not a good thing. But it's something that if somebody were to say to you, by the way, it's never happened before, but if the entire system jams up because the demand draws down like a neutron bomb hit the place, what would happen? Somebody would probably say, well, if something's expiring, then it's going to go negative. I mean, as a theoretical construct, it probably has been possible all along, right? Which has never happened before. But that doesn't mean that if you want to go out and buy oil, you're going to get it for less than $22. You're not.
Do you think the oil price, are going to, the futures are still going to continue to drop more negative, or are they starting
Brennan,
to back up to
Brennan,
a positive
just,
point
just
today?
In general, the more I listen, the more I watch, and this is, you know, I the reason why I have this what I think is knowledge is because I sat there with a group of 10 people for 2 quarters, University of Chicago, and got the history of economic thought and how, if you don't appreciate how things work together, I mean, if you don't appreciate when things go down like they are now, what a big problem it is. And I think our people are very, very underestimating what they've done. And I think people don't have a knowledge or an understanding, and I don't either. I mean, out of 100% I'd like to know economic-wise, I probably know 5, okay? But it might be one more than a lot of people know, not everybody. But the point is, there was a guy on yesterday talking about how valuable truck drivers are to the operation of the economy. The point is, Brendan, if you understand the economy to a certain extent, and again, I'm not like I know all of it, every piece of it is important, because without any piece of it, it's no good. I keep using this connection. It's the same thing as the human body, right? You can't say if the heart doesn't work, the thing doesn't work. If the brain doesn't work, it doesn't work. If all of a sudden you stop pooping, that's not good for 2 weeks. You got
there's an old joke about that.
Yeah.
Who's the boss of the body?
Yep. Well, unless it was a poster. You know, everybody was arguing over who was the most important, and finally the butt says, well, I'm the most important, and they all laughed at him. He closed up, and after 3 days, the brain went dizzy, the heart went weak, and so what was the final story was, to be boss, you don't have to be smart, you just got to be a bleep.
You don't have to be a brain, all you have to do is be
a bleep.
The other end.
Yep. But, I mean, why?
Except what everybody has.
Yeah, but everybody comes on the air and they're like, oh my God, this is an important piece of the academy, this is an important piece of the academy. It's all important. The whole thing is, that's why it works. Right? I mean, where am I wrong here? Maddie, you disagree with me all the time. Am I right or not?
No, you're 100% right.
Well, Chief, you know, that's one of the points that I mentioned to you yesterday, like to talk about today. You know, yesterday was Boston Marathon Day.
Yeah, let's talk about this, please.
They did not hold the Boston Marathon, obviously, because of the coronavirus. They had the foresight to call it a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, obviously if it was supposed to be held yesterday, it was right in the middle of a spike in things happening in Boston. But the ramifications of that, just like you're talking now about the oil, the ramifications of that is hundreds of millions of dollars flow into the Boston economy this past weekend because of the Boston Marathon. And yet they pushed it back to September, and I don't know that it's going to go in September either. But, you know, right now there are five major marathons. You know, when you think about our buddy Jordan, there are five world marathon majors coming up in 7 weeks in September, October, November. You've got Boston, Berlin, London, Chicago, and New York between September 14th and November 3rd. If those races don't come about, there is billions of dollar impact collectively to those five cities.
Did you listen to Week of Friday when Brendan was on? When Jordan was on?
No, I didn't hear that.
What he said was, for those that weren't listening, I don't think you were here, Matty.
No, I was here.
Well, you were, okay. But in Tokyo, by running the marathon just for the professional racers and not letting anybody else go, by actually, quote, having the marathon, none of the sponsors got their money back, and none of the people like you were going to go over and run it and had hotels and airfares and stuff. Your insurance did not kick in because they, quote, had the marathon.
They did. Yeah, they didn't cancel it.
I mean, so Boston, these guys, they didn't think they'd get away with that, obviously.
Well, there was a lot of pushback on that, and I read a lot of articles about that from people who were and really perturbed at the airlines because the airlines were not giving money back, were not giving refunds. In many cases, weren't even giving vouchers because the race was technically on. So I know that's an issue. But I'm talking about the economic value to the cities,
right,
not just to the runners. But it's a huge impact. And, you know, when you balance that against, I mean, take Chicago, for example. Chicago's marathon is October the 11th. By that time, it's not just whether Chicago is open for business again, however you define open for business again. But you've got to think that Chicago is one of those marathons where people come from all 50 states, and come from usually about 100 foreign countries into this case. So I think that one of the discussions that's going on right now in the Bank of America Chicago Marathon office, and maybe in Jordan's office, is what do we do with this race? Do we make it a U.S.-only race? Do we prohibit anybody coming in from international destinations, which could be 30%, 25-30% of the racers? You know, what about all the monies that they would bring in? But if they do that, the point you raised is that insurance, travel insurance for a lot of those things will not kick in, so they have a harder time getting their money back. But, you know, the city also loses money. It loses tax revenues from the hotel tax. It loses sales tax from the restaurants. The restaurants, all of the merchandise that would be bought, it's hundreds of millions of dollars per city for this, which is the reasons I think that Boston pushed it back to September, London pushed it back to October, and the other three, Berlin, Chicago, and New York, are still all scheduled right now. I think each one of those is waiting for the governing body, whether it's, you know, somebody in the administration or the governor or the city's mayor, to say, we can't hold this marathon, it is canceled. But you're not going to see the race directors say, we cannot hold this yet. They're not going to say that until they've been ordered to by the governors or by the president.
The people, I'm asking you a question, you may not know the answer. Man, you might know this. Is if you had our buddy, my buddy, Billy, over at the series that I almost have forgotten, it has been open so long. He had, you know, he goes on these nice trips, and he had, you know, one of these 15, 20 grand jobs, the cruise and the side trips to the Mediterranean, to Greece, or wherever the hell he was going. And, now, are those things all been officially canceled to the point where he gets his insurance, or are they still fighting that, or what?
I think some of them have been canceled, and some of them have, but I don't know. I think part of it depends on where the cruise ships are going or where he's going to. For example, if his package would be to a Mediterranean cruise where they're going to put in at Rome, I doubt that that's still going to happen. But, you know, I think if you're going on a Caribbean cruise, it may still be at least technically available.
Well, the one cruise ship that just docked yesterday, they were on an around-the-world thing. And when the guy found out about it, all the places they're supposed to stop, if they had any coronavirus there at all, he didn't stop. He said people come out with I guess food and water. And I don't think you need water, but nobody in the ship sick. They were like the one place that was immune to it because he never went anywhere near a port where he had it. The captain was pretty smart. But now he had to put back. They were in Hong Kong or something, and they came back here. They were gone for like 3 weeks.
Well, that's very unusual. I didn't read that story, but you know, really, when you think about it, there are very few places that are worse to be at a time like this than on a cruise ship.
Well, any place that's close. I mean, a subway car has got to be as bad or worse.
Well, yeah, a subway car is bad, but you know, even if you're taking the Red Line from Howard Street down into the Loop, you're on there for what, 30 minutes. As opposed to 2 weeks on a cruise ship.
Yeah, yeah.
With common areas to get your food or your drinks. Notwithstanding the story that alcohol kills the coronavirus, which isn't circulating.
Well, it does over a certain amount, but you're not really going to drink rubbing alcohol too often. Brandon, thank you
yeah,
very
maybe
much,
it's
buddy.
Killing the virus, maybe it's killing you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week, if not before, bud. Take care of yourself. SP Futures down 41, not good. NASDAQ Futures down 74. We got the XLE down another $1.22. That's the oil. Then we'll come back with Mr. Joel on Cannon.
Your investments will make you wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 42.75. NASDAQ futures down 84. Dow futures are down about 500. So get a load of this, man. On the CNBC site now, they normally have a 10-minute delay. So now they're telling you as of what time the thing is coming across. They made that before. So the Dow here, they got it down 423. And it's got it at 724.37, which is what, 10 minutes ago, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so they don't, so the stuff is moving so fast, the 10 minute ain't cutting it anymore, as you might say. Crude oil, well, let's go in order here. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 286, 2.7%. FTSE down 107, 1.8. CAC around down 107, that's 2.4. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 388, that's 2%. Shanghai down 25.9%. Hang Seng down 536, 2.2. Bonds, we are at minus 0.57. No, we're positive 0.57. It's minus 0.05. So we're leaking down again in the rate. So the bonds are going up. One minus 0.48. Japan, positive. Positive 0.019. Oil, just as I was saying, the June contract is hanging in there. It is not hanging in there. It's down 396 to 1647. So that's the one that's live, not the one that's negative that expires today. Brent down 413, 2144. Natural gas, 194. That's actually going up, which is weird. RBOB, 58 cents. And I got this morning I heard gasoline at the pump in Wisconsin is $1.20. Yikes. Gold down 25 bucks, 1685. Silver down 65 cents, 1495. That's kind of surprising. Eddie, what do you got for traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a very good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Nice and quiet, sunshine, dry out there, and the drivers are behaving accordingly. Of course, light traffic volumes as it's been the last several weeks. So you enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're coming in on any of the expressways. Only crash right now on the screen is on Devon Avenue and Bussey Road, northwest. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but cooler than yesterday. We have some wind gusts and wind chills in the upper 30s if you're close to the lake. We'll reach a sunny high of 50, but again, downtown it'll feel colder than that. Right now it is crystal clear and 37 degrees going up to a high of 50. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 83 today. Right now it's clear and 63. On this day in sports history, Chief, April 21st, 1996, the Bulls won their 72nd game, starting off that season 72-8 to break the all-time wins record in the NBA. Of course, they lost their last two and finished at 72-10, and then that record was broken a couple of years ago by the Golden State Warriors. And on this date in 2012, Chief, White Sox pitcher Philip Umber, if you remember him, back in 2012, pitched a perfect game against the Seattle Mariners 8 years ago on this date, the MLB's 21st MLB perfect game at that time in 2012.
Chief? Wow. Now, where is he now?
He was kind of a guy that had a flash in the pan season, and then you never really heard from him after that. And I can't remember if it was injuries or what.
I was watching one of those old games the other night, and I was watching Mike Bielecki. He had the big year in 89, remember?
I do, yeah. He had a decent career.
Yeah, he had a decent
late
career.
80s, early 90s, but nothing spectacular.
Well, the one year he was, what, 18-9? Joel, how are you?
Good. Did I ever tell you my Bobby Thigpen story?
No. I like that guy, though. He's a good pitcher.
A buddy of mine, when I was living in Chicago, we were talked into a fantasy baseball league. And we're like, you know, we don't know anything, you know, we didn't do any research, and we just figured that, you know, we would follow the cues of everybody else. And so, lo and behold, we get the first pick in the draft, right? And it was the year after Bobby Thigpen. I think he, I don't know if he was Cy Young or he had a fantastic year. So with the first pick in the draft, we took him, and he broke down that year and was out of the league by the All-Star break.
That was your number one overall pick. Needless to say, your team wasn't that good that year.
Didn't he come back to play Chicago softball, Eddie?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I was watching, last night I watched, well, there's old stuff's on, yeah, the 89 draft of the NFL, and the number one pick was Troy Aikman, and the number three pick was Barry Sanders. And you might ask, who was picked ahead of Barry Sanders, for God's sake? You would probably know this. He had more accolades. They thought he was going to be the best ever at the position.
1989?
Yep. Joe Theismann.
At least give him the position.
He was an offensive lineman. But your buddy, Chris Berman, the young Chris Berman.
Oh, Tony Mandarich?
Yeah.
That's right. That's a good guess.
Good guess.
Yep. Well, he set a lineman, so that, you know, that made it pretty easy.
Well, they were talking about...
The draft was pretty loaded, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, they were talking about Joe Theismann and said... He was a color man at one of his games, and he's never seen a tackle like him. The only guy maybe was Munoz or maybe John Hanna were in that class. And what, the guy, did he even play?
He did. He bounced around, and then I think he was with the Packers, and I think the Packers were the one that took him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once he got off the juice, he wasn't worth anything.
Yeah. Hey, how many calls have you guys had about this oil market yesterday? My phone, which never really rings off the hook, especially in bad markets, but except for people saying, "Boy, I wish I'd have protected my stuff last year when you said to." Oh, well, that's fine.
Unprecedented, Chief.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've been around for a long time, and you know, so you know the mechanics. I mean, effectively, sellers had to pay buyers to take their oil excess capacity here. We've been talking about supply and demand, and, you know, we tried to get a deal to cut the supply, but where's demand? And zero.
Yeah.
And then you look at, you know, a lot of these times when you look at things like this, I like to look at what was the trend before this happened. And no doubt the trend was down. So this is a continuation. People are getting destroyed, Chief. It's just unprecedented. Yesterday, I kept on thinking, like, God, doesn't June have to follow? I mean, is there that much of a disconnect? Doesn't June have to go down? And boy, oh boy, oh boy, too bad margins 2.5 time on the crude oil contracts. But that's, you know, for the volatility.
Well, I don't think it's volatility at all, Joel. It's just the whole system is jammed up. Now, all the pipelines are full. They're being turned off because nobody can take it at the other end, which means the guys pouring it in on this end have nowhere to go with it. The stuff that needs to be heated, I think, is just going to rot. I mean, this is a, you know, may be mad at me. This is a serious arm shot at the people we have in power pretty much everywhere, Joel. And I'm going to say this, and the people that put them there, and the people you listen to on CNBC and Fox Business and everything all day long, these are people with secure paychecks that have no idea how the rest of the economy works, where people don't have secure paychecks, how truckers are affected, how oil people are affected, how electricians are affected. This all is such a... If you take the people away to get paid by the government, which is a very simple thing, whether you're... Not that the job is simple, but... It's a very simple thing. I get my check from Chicago. I get it from Illinois. I get it. Well, Trump doesn't take a check, but the people around him all do. Oh, what's the problem? Another 2 months. Well, even Fauci, you know, the guy was brilliant when he was young. Now he's a bureaucrat. The pain that is hitting all these other people, and I understand this disease is pretty bad. Matter of fact, in a lot of places, I think it's worse than people give it credit for being, because it's so weirdly selective and so forth. But the fact is, this thing is burying us. And you can't just, because I'm getting my check, or don't worry, I send everybody $1,200, you should be okay for 6 months. No, you're not. Not to mention the fact nobody's even got the thing yet. But, I think they're understanding of what's happening here, Joel. I talked to people yesterday, you know, Well, can I buy some oil at minus $10? No, you can't. What's the matter with you? I mean, the reason why the guy sold it for minus $10 is because he can't take delivery anywhere. Neither can you. Oh. I mean, hey, this all this stuff is, when you talk about an economy, it's all fine-tuned, Joel, especially in this day and age with just-in-time inventories, things like that. You jam up one thing, you jam up everything. I don't know. Do you think our geniuses that run the place really understand this? I'm not saying I do. I don't understand a little bit of it because I've always been an entrepreneur and I've studied some of this, but out of all 100%, I would like to know. I know five, but I'm not one
Chief,
of those.
Yeah, Chief. I don't know how many. We've been doing this show for several years, right?
Yep.
And I don't think you ever put together a string of sentences and a depiction of what's going on in our country today. I cannot disagree with anything you made in those statements, that your statement, and you know how I've been feeling for the past couple weeks, Chief, and you know how I've been talking, and you know, the market's reflecting it today. The move on Friday, which blew a lot of shorts out of the water, you know, including me. Here's the rug pull. I don't see a way out of this. And but I'm not president of the United States. You know, I'm not Congress. It's Democrats. It's Republicans. It's the administration. It's the world government. I mean, we are in bad shape.
They are all secure, and they're front running the market. Not all of them, and they're all getting paid. And they
ain't gonna get paid for. It ain't gonna last forever, Chief. The gravy train's gonna run out.
Could very well, but it's just from a social standpoint. I know you have a lovely wife in the business of the healthcare. I just talked to one of my buddies, and he said his mother's in a nursing home, and she's starting to not do so well. Can't visit her, and if she dies, you can have one family member go see her near the end. I'm like, this is not America, Joel. I don't care. Those people.
I went to visit my mom is in a assisted living facility, and she's not allowed to leave her room.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to paint, you know, a grim picture. You know, this is a reality of the situation, and you know, I try and be consistent in my thoughts here when I, you know, come on the show and talk. And you put it perfectly.
Well, Joel,
before
I let you go, if somebody has a broken leg, it's a horrible thing. Okay, but if you don't recognize the extent of the injury, you're never going to fix it. You have to recognize how bad you've made things before you can fix them. You can't just say, he's got a pain in his leg, here's an aspirin. Right?
Both legs are chopped off and both arms.
God. Well, let's hope it's not quite that bad. God. Joel, take care of yourself, buddy. Say hello to your lovely bride. Tell her to keep at it. We need her. We'll be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari. Or we have Kenny right away.
Is business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
You must be daddy's little punkin, I can tell by the way you roll.
Well, welcome back. It's actually Jax. We had some country and western, both kinds of music on today, you know. Just saying, it's good, Matty. S&P futures now down 51. This is looking pretty sad here. And Nasdaq futures down 82. Dow futures, let me see what those things are. They're down about 500. 423. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I hear you sold some oil futures yesterday at 20 and bought them back at minus 30, you shrewd devil.
So, listen, somebody absolutely had to get crushed on that yesterday.
And oh, God.
I'm sure it'll come out at some point. But
well, I'm hoping it's
You know, it felt a little bit surreal, especially when it was approaching zero. But then it started to go negative. I'm sitting there scratching my head and go, I don't think this has ever happened before.
No, but it's not. It's not the same as options, though. I mean, if you have a long call option or put option, at the very least, you just say I'm not taking it. And there's no,
right.
But there the seller still gets the seller puts it to you, not the other way around.
That's right, but it's physical delivery, so you either have to take it or not, which is apparently, you know, what happened yesterday. These people that didn't want the physical delivery were willing to pay you to keep it. Right?
But also, Kenny, there's a reason why these guys hung on to these longs, because I think the last date, there's like a 2 week period for delivery. So today at 2:30 is the last day. So
Right. Normally
you'd be out of this long 2-3 weeks ago. And for some reason these guys weren't. And I don't know if they thought at the last minute they would get the squeeze and it come their way and it didn't. Or something. Because normally there's nothing left by now.
I agree. I mean, somebody's on the wrong side of that trade for sure.
We're talking with Joel Kenny and I really appreciate your knowledge of the economy as a whole. I really am getting very nervous that our big chiefs don't seem to understand that they're picking these areas that are, you know, the areas that, what do they call them? What's the word they're using? The key areas. I think you should understand, Kenny, everything in this economy is key. I mean, if you talk about this, the warehousing groups, and you don't take care of the truckers, or they're not doing it, it's all together. I don't get that sense from these people. Do you?
Yeah, no, it's not separate at all. It's very, very interconnected, and you know, it doesn't make sense. But I agree with you. I'm on the same side as you.
You're not supposed to do that on radio. Just saying, you know, I don't know that we have 2 more months, Kenny, before we turn things back on a little bit. I mean, I think we have to start moving a little bit in that direction, even if we're just preparing for it. I don't know that you can.
I agree. I'm in the camp that says we got to get this going. We can't wait. I mean, yeah, okay. So the end of April, so next week, fine. But beyond that, you really can't wait. I mean, we had to kickstart this and get this going.
Well, I think in some ways
it doesn't mean that it's going to return to normal the way it was, because people can clearly continue to work from home. But you've got to start to get people out. You've got to start to get businesses open. You've got to start to do it.
Well, and it's too, and I don't want to get into this with you. We have better things to talk about. But to the extent that it's a little bit of class warfare, we can stop that. I mean, we don't care if the Amazon guy works because he's delivering crap to me, even though they're obviously not 6 feet apart. But we got the poor furniture guy can't open up his store. Who's ever been closer than 6 feet apart in a furniture store, for God's sake? I mean, at some point here, I mean, as long as the people work in the back of the restaurant and we don't see them, we don't care about them as long as I get my stuff. We don't care about the guys behind the drive-in window, because we don't care if they get it, as long as they hand the stuff to me out the window. We got to stop that, Kenny. I mean, we got to stop that, and I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree. You know, and I don't think it's ever been, I mean, even though these restaurants, some of them are still open and they're doing takeout only, has it really been decided whether or not somebody who's sick is making the food? Is that a problem?
Okay, don't even bring that up, because it'll be all over the place today.
I hear you. But, no, one way or the other, I am in the same camp as you, that at some point we got to start to, you know, I'm not saying that I'm a huge Trump fan, but, you know, when he says we got to start getting this, we got to start moving, we do have to start moving. And there are a bunch of governors that would agree, some that certainly don't, but others do agree that we got to get this country moving again.
I think, Kenny, the thing that has to happen, and this is after watching all these news conferences and listening to the people on CNBC, who I honestly can't believe they've given some of these people 15, 20 minutes of time that don't seem to have done any homework whatsoever. They're just like talking their position. They you know, there's people, they must have had a steady stream of 6 people yesterday that said, well, we can't really do anything until we get a vaccine. Kenny, we're never going to get a vaccine.
You're not going to get a vaccine anytime soon. That's the damn sure.
When's the last time we had a cold vaccine?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I hear you.
I don't know
where these people, you know, what they're thinking, if they're looking long term. They're obviously not looking long term. You can't.
Well, at some point, I think the truth is for what they've done, the fact that they were so late, pushing people to stay home, even though you shoved people home, that caused more problems, I do believe that Carl is absolutely correct that the centers of disease of these whole things have been these hospitals. That they've spread everything. That's where you got it, right?
No, I didn't get it at a hospital. I got it, I think, just in New York City someplace, either on the subway or someplace. I haven't been in the hospital. In fact, I didn't go to the hospital when I thought I was sick, because my symptoms, I didn't have the high fever, and I didn't have the cough. I just had the lack of energy, the loss of taste, the low-grade fever that kept coming and going, the headaches.
Okay.
The pounding body aches. But I was told just to drink plenty of liquids and stay in bed and take Tylenol. And unless the fever spiked to more than 103, I was not supposed to go to the hospital or do anything else.
Were these alcoholic beverages?
I didn't have any. I didn't, honestly. I stayed in bed. I was just exhausted.
Sounded like you were knocked out pretty good.
Yeah, well, no, I was knocked out. But,
I think, Kenny, at some point
I still have been unable to get the antibody test up here, and I'm still in Boston. I'm trying to get back to Florida this week.
You're on my list. The guy might come on the show Friday. His firm has them, and I'm going to try and get some of them for him coming on. If I do, I'll send you one.
Yeah. My wife's firm down in Florida are trying to get a bunch of them to test their employees as well as the families of the employees, just to see where everyone kind of stands, you know. But, yeah, we'll see. I'm not even sure I can get back there on Wednesday. I mean, I can get back on Wednesday. I can certainly take a flight, but once I get there, I'm going to have to spend another 2 weeks alone inflation. Even though I think I'm okay because I think I already had it and I should have the antibodies. But until
Who's making you stay in quarantine? The wife?
Well, the state of Florida, because when you land, the state of Florida looks at your license, and I still happen to have a New York license because I don't have my, but they're asking you, like they are in Massachusetts, like they are in New York, to, you know, if you go from state to state, they want you to stay in quarantine. So my wife does suffer from asthma, so I am worried about getting her. God forbid I am sick. I don't want her to get sick because she's been not sick so far. So, I'll just stay in quarantine for at least another week.
Okay, well, I mean, the people who are doing it, some point, Kenny, we're just going to have to say, here's where we are. By the way, the hospitals have room in case you end up there, but we can't beat this thing totally. It's going to drop down for the summer, hopefully.
Agreed.
And we're just going to say, you are going to have to take your chances. If you want to go to a ball game, go. But you can't sue the Cubs if you get it there. Right?
Right.
You know, that type of thing. I mean, we're going to get to that point just like any other disease.
Well, you know, they were talking on CNBC just now. They had Barry Sternlicht on who, you know, runs all these hotels. They were talking about having to sign, if you go, once you get this economy open, that when you check into the hotel, you're also not going to sign a waiver that says if you get sick in this hotel, you can't sue me. Really? Come on.
Well, what are we doing?
But it's also,
if it's negligence, that doesn't count.
I hear you. Yeah. If it's negligent, you're right. But if it's just, you know, you go there and you end up getting sick. I mean, what happens today if I go to a hotel and I catch the flu from somebody's hotel? Am I suing the hotel because I got the flu? No.
But everybody's thinking now that you have this right to
exactly
do this.
Exactly right.
And you know what? You might be the only person who's agreed with me because I'll tell you what, I was with Audrey and some of her pals this weekend. Not a chance. I mean, you literally have the right to tell somebody who's coughing next to you to, like, to get off your bus. And whoa.
Yeah, apparently you do now.
Yeah, apparently you do now.
Apparently, if you get sick, you have the right to sue everybody you want if you get sick now. At least that's what it sounds like is going to happen. And I think that's baloney.
Yeah, I do too.
But the law industry is loving it.
Yeah. Yeah, the lawyers will definitely. Kenny, take care of yourself. And, hey, if I get that test, you're on my list, bud.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Take care. SP Futures now. Hey, we're only down 49.50. We're back up a half a buck. NASDAQ Futures down 90. Come back with Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just been working on the board. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph, Luckbox Magazine. SP Futures down 51. This is kind of low I've seen since we've been doing the show. NASDAQ Futures down 88. Dow Futures down 524. We've got oil futures, the Junes now, not the ones that went crazy yesterday and are still negative, the Mays. These are the Junes that I was saying, don't worry, those guys are still 21. Well, they're not anymore. They're 1639. Jeff just got back from Wisconsin where he filled up his motorhome with a $1.21 gas. How was that trip, Jeff?
Well, $1.21 gas is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
But I have to ask, first of all, hey, Matt. Hey, Chief. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. You know, but I what I really wanted to ask you is, does this continue? I mean, I saw reports from Wall Street firms say this is going to go into the next contract. You know, I thought most of this would resolve yesterday with the settlement, but if you're saying we're trading down to $16 again, or yeah, it looks like there's more to come. I don't see how demand resolves itself anytime soon, so doesn't this contract look under a lot of pressure to you?
Well, Jeff, I think you know, I would never sell you short. You know that the only really way the futures contracts, really any futures contract, work the way they're supposed to, that even though you have this very defined delivery mechanism for every single commodity, when you start to use the delivery mechanism, you got a problem, right? It's mm-hmm. It's designed to not be used. It's designed only in an extreme case where the seller's getting screwed and the price doesn't come down for him to be able to deliver something, make sure the cash price equals the futures price at the end, correct?
Right.
I mean, what do you think would happen if all the gasoline that's refined in this country, the delivery point for RBOB gas is in New York Harbor? I mean, how the hell would you get gas from the Bolingbrook refinery to New York Harbor if you had to? Right? I mean, it's just, I mean, if somebody dropped a bomb in the last lock and dam at Alton, Illinois, and all of a sudden you had grain here, what are you going to do? You're going to take all your grain and you're going to head for the storage bin in Marseille and hope it's not full. The system is not designed to pick up slack like or mess like we have now. So
I'm clear that we haven't seen this in oil before, but has there been this degree of unprecedented contango in other commodities?
Can you think of a time
where this has happened?
You know, I don't remember the year, Jeff, but somebody, the guys that bought Central Soya, that's that Italian firm, I always forget the name of the place. they tried to corner the delivery mechanism here in Illinois. I think it was in Beans. I'm not positive. My brother Dan knows way more than me. Where they essentially, they leased all the storage facilities and wouldn't let anybody in or something.
Mm.
So it has happened. I don't think I've ever seen.
Yeah, but that was from manipulation, not from market prices.
No, but this I think the market price is every rail line, every truck, every pipeline going to Cushing, Oklahoma is full. That's the problem. Everything, it's just jammed. And these pipelines, I mean, what do you do, you know, if you're oblivious to all this and you have 48 trucks worth of oil you got from somewhere and you pull up to the pipeline and the guy says, we can't take that. What do you mean you can't take it? Well, the refinery on the other end is not selling any gas. The pipeline's full and it's not moving. You got to be kidding me. What if your oil is the heavy crap like in Canada and it needs to be flowing and it needs to be heated? If it's not flowing, God help you with that pipeline. I mean, there's very serious problems all through the system when this starts to happen. And if you had oil now, and if you happen to have oil, you want it on a ship someplace. I mean, you don't want...
That's right.
I mean,
you want it in motion.
Yeah, well,
that's
but I mean, sure. you don't want it there either, but at least... The last thing you wanted is the front of a pipeline. It's now clogged or never going to, you know, that particular refinery can't, you know, they're not going to start up for another 8 weeks. I mean, it's, I never thought there was that big of an advantage, but there is because who knows? They might need oil in, you know, Zimbabwe or someplace. You can run it down there. I mean, at least you have some flexibility. But if you're here in the Permian and they don't want any more in New Orleans, I don't know what you do.
This being such a new topic, there also hasn't been much opportunity for discussion yet of the geopolitical implications, but think for a moment how this, how devastating to Saudi and Russia, you know.
This is.
I mean, we've been concerned about Russia for a long time. But boy, this is really devastating to them. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we've developed some oil independence, and this is devastating for certain different reasons because it implicates the broader economy and the inevitable recession, you know, unless there's a V-shaped recovery out of this, which, you know, becomes the next big economic question. But boy, Russia is definitely on the ropes when you think about the impact this lessened oil demand has on their economy.
Jeff, we always would have been independent if we would have shut the place down and dropped the quantity demanded by 50%.
Yeah, that's one way to achieve it.
That's one way to get there.
Yeah. You know, it's a shame you speak of the shutdown. I will say this, and inevitably everything now becomes a political discussion, but it is really a shame that politics has become so much a discussion or an underlying theme in this shutdown discussion versus, you know, it implies that, and I know you're always critical of our leaders, as you should be, but it implies that we just can't walk and chew gum at the same time, that we can't, you know, we can't deal with the realities of a global pandemic and also be thinking about how to, you know, return jobs to 30 million people and get the economy back on track at the same time. Doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't have to be this binary one or other decision, which, of course, everybody on the left and right wants to turn it into, you know, that we just can't, you know, try to address both problems simultaneously is really a mess of the media and politicians and just this kind of ridiculously partisan world that we live in.
Well, people in the, I listened to Jay Pritzker's news conference, and well, I'm trying not to be sexist here, but he was just, you know, overrun by maybe just some of the part I listened to, it had to be like five lady reporters in a row. And every one of them, why aren't we all wearing masks here? He says, well, I don't think we need to wear masks here. I mean, you should if you're in your position where you're seeing people and if you're in a store and blah, blah, blah. He goes, I don't think I need a... Well, why not? This other governor did it. What's that got to do with the price of rice? I mean, he just was... The idea to drive this safety, because a lot of people really have, Jeff, and I've had some interesting discussions with people, they are absolutely willing to trade safety for any kind of freedom, but I'm not willing to do that. But you have to. There's two things I listened to last weekend. One is I talked to my mother's cousin who's in Columbus, and she's been a teacher forever. I mean, every grade, everything, whatever, and brilliant lady. And she goes, this is an abortion. I call home, and these are middle class white kids. Okay. She says, I call home. No, we did their homework. The mother has got three kids at home. She's not working. The place I can tell by the phone, it's carnage behind the place. You can't go to the playground. They don't even want you outside, for God's sake. I guess Ohio in that area is really buttoned down. And she goes, nobody's doing her homework. I don't think the mother, if she thinks she's working for home, she's not. And all you hear is fighting in the background. He goes, this isn't working. And then you get Jay Pritzker on there. Ah, we're going to close the schools for another month and a half because he's getting his paycheck, not that he needs it. And all the teachers that voted for him, they don't want these kids in class. They'd rather stay home anytime, half of them. So, I mean, it's an absolute disconnect. There's going to come a day when you're going to have to go back and teach that class. And you know what? It's not going to be zero risk. It's never going to be zero risk. Now, I'm not saying today's the day, but
you're right with that topic. In fact, you know, we had an editor's meeting. We're always working over at Luckbox Magazine on, you know, what our next topic is. And that exact topic, what you just brought up, we were trying to articulate and frame a story around. And that is the notion that, you know, this idea of science, you know, believe in science, the science, it has become a lazy editorial trope already. It's amazing how quickly things can become a cliche. And it's become used politically as a term to believe in science. Well, I believe in science. I also know when the science isn't there. And the science does not exist. The science is a moving target on the pandemic.
Right.
All you have to do is open up the Johns Hopkins dashboard every morning, like most of us do, and look at it and know that, of course, the models are wrong. I'm not criticizing the models or the science, because models are just that. They are models. Right, they're supposed to be wrong, and that's how they improve. But for anyone to pretend that we're following science is ridiculous. The science doesn't exist.
No.
It is about as unclear as it could possibly be. All we are doing is following data, and the data has no predictive. Its predictive capacity has proven to be unreliable thus far, partially because, of course, the data sets are flawed, and that's a whole other story about China, etc. But let's get back to what you said that triggered this reaction or this conversation. This should be about risk. This is not about science. This is a risk assessment right now, and the assessment is: to what extent do we? Well, both at a personal and at a government level, right? Personal risk is something that people should have some willingness to take on themselves. I mean, clearly some of the actions in Michigan by the governor were overreaching. There's no epidemiologist who can tell you why you can't cut your own lawn or be on a motorboat or be playing in a park with your kids. Or buying furniture in a store. That has nothing to do with science. We know that. But there is a question about personal risk. When does someone's personal risk, yet at the same time we're all appalled to see people protesting without masks on within a foot of each other. That's not right. So these are questions about risk and risk assessments on both a personal level and on a broader community level. And that's really what should be governing this right now is risk models. And the risk that we want to assume on our economy and the risk that an individual wants to assume without putting others at risk. But stop throwing the term science around when the science does not exist. The science on this pandemic will exist in about a year or so, hopefully.
Maybe.
Maybe. Hopefully, you know, it's so much dependent on getting the real data from the source out of China, and, you know, that's really, really questionable if we'll ever really know. I mean, if you want a clear indication of that, all you have to do is recognize the fact that China, just about 4 or 5 days ago, doubled its death toll in one day. So we know that data set's flawed.
I mean, if they do that about
completely corrupt and completely unreliable. But stop talking about follow the science. It is just become a political term now, and it's a shame to see a term like science being used politically and suddenly lose its value.
Well, Jeff, if we're talking about science and believing these guys, and I think, again, I'm a give the guy accolades and I give him crap. I mean, Fauci is the most brilliant man that after 30 years of a bureaucracy, what happened to him? I've read article after article on this show talking about this particular disease is unusual in the sense that it's way more contagious before you know you have it than any other disease we've ever come across, except for maybe measles. And then the minute you get a symptom, it seems like it drops down. Because once your body starts to fight it, it fights the contagion piece of it too. And yet, I'm going to say in the Chicago area, I happen to know some people that are in this trick box, if you don't have a symptom, you can't get a test. In the science, I'm talking about the science of this, and I'm not whatever those guys are, epidemiologist or that's insane for this disease. Absolutely insane for you to walk into a hospital, and if you don't have a fever, they don't test you. You're way more contagious before you get the fever. If I know right. that, how do they not know that?
Right.
I mean, the science on this has been horrible all the way down the line.
And not to blame the science, because there's good reason for it to be flawed at this point. I understand that. It's just the use of the term science for either you believe in the science or you don't. Well, there's nothing to believe in here. I mean, it's strictly being used as a political term, and it's one of the many frustrations that.
But when you talk about the risk, Jeff, I mean, I have a different, an odd view of this, okay? Because I traded the OEX bid for 20 years. There's 350 people jammed into a spot about the size you would never think 350 people get in. And half the time, in the wintertime, half of these idiots are coughing. I was one of the idiots. And I would make the determination if we had guys in the pit that were older. And on those days, they wouldn't go in there. Mm-hmm. Right? They made the call. At age 35, I said, you know what? I'm going to roll with it. Maybe I had it before anyway. I've been in here long enough. There's a disease. I probably already had it. Okay, maybe that was a foolish thing to do. But somewhere along the line, this gets to be your call. If you and I want to go to the Tripoli and sit next to each other and have a beer, that's our call. Maybe you as a government need to tell me everything I need to know. This is how contagious it is. This is how it is. This is how it travels 6 feet. It does this. It does that. But at the end of the day, okay, it's my call, not yours. Right? And I think that's the way we've always been in this society. And I don't know if this disease is enough to change it. Polio didn't. Is this enough to change it? Oh, no. You can't be near me unless you have a mask on the sidewalk. What are you talking about? I don't know, Jeb. We're not there yet because of the contagious of this one. I think the scientists actually fell into the right thing a little bit. I think for another couple of weeks, first of all, even if we try starting things today, which I think we should, it's going to take a while to start things. Plus, when you send people home and without asking the second question, I mean, Jeff, you're pretty good at it. There's no such thing as there's one question. Jeff, in this disease, I think you should go home. I should say, wait a minute, Jeff, what's home like? Well, I got 10 kids, exactly. And my grandmother lives there, and by the way, her four sisters moved in. Wait a minute, maybe you shouldn't go home.
the reports out of Asia were pretty conclusive. I just read them yesterday. Someone sent them over to me that the vast majority of infections occurred in the home, as opposed to contact in public places, that it's actually technically safer to be outside is what the data is showing. And that kind of makes sense, you know, but again, there's some flaws in that kind of baseline reasoning as well. But I'd go back to what you said and agree with you. This has never been done before. This is completely unprecedented. We have never basically interned millions of healthy people. That's never been done in the world before, except in an authoritative regime. You know, maybe the Uyghurs in China right now, the Muslims being interned, the 2 or 3 million of them who are healthy. But this has never been done before, and we're really going to have to take a look at what we're doing.
I would say this, though.
I mean, I get it.
I would say this, though.
Again, it doesn't have to be a black or white issue. For example, I think you should be able to say, hey, look, you can protest if you want to, but you're going to stay 6 feet apart. I think that's the kind of things that we can say, but you can't tell people not to protest.
No.
You know, it's just become overreaching, and it'll be a great thing for civil libertarians to debate for some time to come.
But everybody has an excuse for them, and this is the part that's dangerous. Like one of Audrey's friends, she says, you should have to wear a mask and you shouldn't be like 6 feet apart. And if somebody's coughing, I says, wait a minute, you smoke cigarettes, you cough. Yeah, but that's a cigarette cough. Yeah. And I said, you don't get to say that. And then somebody else was telling me how they and their boyfriend went for a walk, and I said, were you 6 feet apart? Well, no, we live in the same house. Where does that come from? You don't get to decide. 6 feet apart is 6 feet apart. No. We're living in the same house. We're okay. No, you're not okay. If you're going to tell other people to be 6 feet apart, I mean, if I walk into the Triple E and the day it opens and you and I decide to sit next to each other, that's our call. Because guess what? I can't hear you if you're 6 feet apart and I want to talk to you. It may be the wrong one, but if I actually thought you were diseased or I was diseased, I wouldn't be there anyway.
I can't disagree.
So, I mean, I don't think we're there quite yet, but the mentality is, and I think, Jeff, my view of the economy is I think our people, and again, this is, you talk about it not being political for me, as you know, I'm always a little bit different on the political sphere. I don't want a bunch of people who are getting their paychecks, no matter what, and getting their pensions, telling people that aren't getting their paychecks, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the mentality is just not there. I mean, I have no bad things to say about, Lori Lightfoot as a person. I think her start as a mayor has been somewhat abysmal, but she's in an apartment with another person, two people there. She spends her day baking. Have you seen these commercials? If you watch like the old, I mean, a lot of people, they got eight people at home. It doesn't look like that. I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, you can't, this inability to see other people and how they live and what you're doing to them. I hope, Jeff, that it isn't like, I don't care if the Amazon people in the warehouse are 2 feet apart. I just need my friggin' delivery, and I don't care. I don't care what it looks like in the kitchen of that restaurant. I just, when I show up, when I don't feel like cooking, I want dinner. And I really don't want to look behind the door and see how close they are and if they're not wearing masks. There's a lot of that going on, and I think we got to nip that in the bud, or maybe it's too late. I don't know if you agree with that or not. You don't sound like you do, but
I do agree. I do agree.
I will say this is that in New York and Chicago, it's unique. I don't know that you can have 50 people or 100 people jammed in a subway car 2 months ago with this thing first starting out.
There are people that are going to make that decision that this is the only way that they can get to the job that pays them,
right.
And that's a risk that they have to assume.
Right.
And you know, there's we have to allow people to make that decision.
I agree. And I think if we, where do you think, we got a couple minutes before we have our next guest, but you'll stay with us, I assume. If we actually want the economy, I'm not going to rephrase this, how bad have we bleeped ourselves if we want things to be somewhere back to normal? What do you think the lead time is? I'll ask you first before I give you my opinion.
Well, I think that becomes the next big question. And, that, you know, for market people and traders like yourself, you know, that's what we're looking at. Is this a V-shape or a U-shape recovery? You know, there was a period of time where my first instinct was, when we come out of this, it's going to be like the Roaring Twenties, you know, and just people are going to be bouncing off the walls, going crazy. But I don't see a clear path to that anymore. That was my first instinct on this, and I think so much of this has to do with the extent to which this continues to be used politically and influence a lot of people's minds as to what it's like out there. So, you know, let's say we're 30 days out from now and the curve is absolutely flattened and there's been no reemergence or no resilience, no indication of a second wave. You are still going to have people who are not attending concerts. You know, look at Chicago, Lollapalooza, August 4th.
Yeah.
I don't think that's happening. And I don't, you know, I just don't. I would bet that doesn't happen, and that's, you know, 100,000 people over 4 days in Grant Park in Chicago, you know, incredible boom in terms of, you know, the economic impact, particularly for all the stands and vendors that are there and the people around. I don't see that happening. You know, restaurants, I was on a call, I come out of the restaurant business, it was my family business before I've got into the markets and finance and financial publishing. But I have a long history in the restaurant business, and I was on a call with some esteemed national restaurateurs recently, talking about how they come out of this and what's the reality. You know, are they going to be Grubhub dependent? Are they really going to be setting tables 6 feet apart? And if you know anything about the restaurant business, you know that you rely on Fridays and Saturdays for your 1.5 turns. And if you're not turning your tables 1.5 times on a Friday and Saturday, you're not making rent.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that means, you know, 1.5 times, that's a capacity you need. You know, you need, so if you're reducing your capacity by 40%, you're it's over. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. And it's the restaurant business that is really, really, really in a tough spot right now, because there's no indication that people are going to say, okay, this is over, I'm going out to eat. You know, it's just not happening. So, you know, that, and then, you know, obviously so many other industries are going to be impacted, like education, you know, and maybe that's good. Maybe they'll do a shakeup. So I welcome to see. You know, I had James Carville on my podcast yesterday.
Oh, cool.
On a political podcast. And he was, first of all, he was awesome. It was nice to have him on. But he was talking about the fact he's an instructor of the use of emotion in political discourse. He teaches at LSU. He's taught that class for a couple of years. And he was, he's in the Shenandoah Valley right now in a farm where he's, you know, self-isolating. And he was talking about, you know, conducting virtual lectures for the first time, and I asked him if he thought it was scalable and something that, you know, the future of education could ride upon, and he said absolutely not, you know, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens, you know.
He's still married to what's her name?
You know, it's funny. It's funny you ask that. Mary Matlin.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of the Conway couple of the past,
yeah.
Right? Two completely, you know, diverse political spouses. I believe he is, and I know if you listen to our podcast that just went up late last night, you could hear someone doing dishes in the background, and so I didn't have a moment, and he mentioned his wife, but I had heard, and I didn't have time to research before we got on, that they had been divorced, so I just didn't question that. So I honestly don't know. I believe that they are.
they could have divorced
somebody
back
doing
and
dishes in the background.
You never know.
Podcast,
all right, Jeff, so. we got to hang in there, bud. We're going to Mr. Chris Conlon after the break. SP futures,
sure,
down 48, NASDAQ futures down 83, Dow futures down 500 plus. Not a good day so far. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph hanging with us. We also have Chris Connell. He'll be here in a second. Resident of Connell Scientific, based in Maryland. S&P futures down 46. We're actually up $4 since the last time we did this, but still we're way down. NASDAQ futures down 72. Dow's futures down close to 500. Around the rest of the world, not so hot. We've got... refresh everything here. Now they give me the time on this thing, Matty.
I find that interesting, but when stuff's moving so fast, you kind of have to do that.
Yeah, it's unreal.
That's CNBC is on like a 10-minute delay, right, on markets?
Yeah, so now they're saying the Dow's down 537 as of 8:25:38 Eastern Daylight Time.
Yeah,
so
they even give you the seconds, huh?
Yeah, and the seconds. DAX down 359. Again, as of 2:20 p.m., what is CEST? Whatever the hell time they're on. At least I get to know what all the time these guys are on. FTSE down 136. They're on BST?
CEST is Central European Summer Time.
All right, so
BST. It's 2:36 p.m. right now, Central European Summer
Time. So summertime is daylight time.
Yep. There,
okay. It's more daylight than
interesting, summer. Interesting.
Right? CAC down 140. That's 3%. You learn something every morning, man. Nikkei down 388. That's 2%. Shanghai down 25. That's 1%. Hang Seng down 538. That's 2.2%. Bonds, where the rate is down to 0.56. Bund is a minus 0.49. The Japan, however, has popped above zero, minus 0.019. Oil, whack, whack, whack. Just as I said earlier in the show, the June contract's still 22. So don't worry about the May. Well, the June contract's not 22 anymore. It's down 494, 24%, 1549. Brent down 496. So that spread is down to $5. There's oil as a wash anywhere in this world. Natural gas 188, RBOB 56 cents. Gold, down $32 now, $16.79, but it was over $17 yesterday.
Silver down 77 cents, 1483. Many of the Air Force Trevi weather sports. Better news, Ariel.
Well, of course, there is no sports news. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, as you can imagine, coming in on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions, as is the Eisenhower. Stevenson all quiet. Southside expressway is looking good. Only crash in the area right now is North Shore, Route 41 southbound between Old Elm Road and Half Day Road, which is Route 22. There is a crash, and that has 41 southbound closed right at Half Day there, with crews on the scene working to get that reopened. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but a cold, blustery wind. So we will reach a high of 50, but it won't feel as warm as that. Temperatures real feel are more like the upper 30s or low 40s, but it'll look nice, at least looking out the window. Sunshine with a high of 50, real feel much colder. Right now it is clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine and a high of 83 today. Right now it's clear and 64. Chief.
Mr. Chris Carlin, the book is Algorithmic Trading with Python, Quantitative Methods and Strategy Development. Now, is that Python either the very large snake or the very high-end revolver made by Colt?
It is both of those things, and it is additionally the programming language that all of the quant traders are using to make heavy-hitting machine learning models nowadays.
See, I didn't even know that. I knew about the gun. That's bad, I think. I know about the snake.
Well, they're all heavy-hitting.
They're all heavy-hitting. Ah. Anyway, how are you? Good morning.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
So did you guys, I'll start you out with a nasty one. Did you guys correctly predict a negative price in the May oil futures yesterday? Or is that wild or what?
No, and I did something even worse, actually. When I got started writing this book a couple months ago, I was just too stressed out by the market, so I liquidated everything, and that ended up being really lucky for me.
I don't think it was lucky. I think it was smart. Just saying. when you're not sure getting out,
write a book.
Try and talk people into doing that to your clients.
I like that. Not sure. Yeah. Write a book.
Yeah. Well, so tell me what's going on here. Can you guys actually having luck? Trying to figure any of this? Is I'm telling you, I'm struggling.
That's definitely a point I wanted to get to while talking to y'all here today. When there's no scenario to model that looks like some scenario in the past, I mean, the machine can't learn it. Humans are smarter than machines, and machines have the advantage in that they can process large amounts of data at once really quickly. So in quant trading, a lot of the times, we look back only 5 years in order to train our models because we say, hey, the market as it existed 6, 7, 8 years ago is not at all similar to the market we see 3, 4, 5 years ago. So we kind of cut it off at 5 years. So if you think about someone in the equities market right now that has 5 years of look back data trying to model what's happening right now in history, impossible from a quantitative standpoint.
If I go back 40 years, I'm not so sure I could spot a spot either. I mean, even if you go back that
exactly.
far. I'm not so sure even the Great Depression gives you any sort of a inkling in here either. I don't know what does.
Right, and we've seen people online trying to, like, line up
that
the five
year, hey, go ahead, hey, Chris, does that five-year cutoff, is that based on history or data? I mean, that... How was that arrived at, or is that kind of a hard line, or is that an approximation?
It's definitely not a hard line, and it depends on the density and the sampling frequency of data you're talking about. So, if I'm a market maker and I have tick data that's coming in on the millisecond basis, there might be such a huge quantity of data that I might only look back 1 or 2 years. But in this book, if we're looking at daily price history data, we're going to go back 10 years. So it's not an exact number, and the principle comes from a concept in statistics where you want to use enough data to obtain a good amount of statistical power for your predictions without looking so far back in the market that old data kind of becomes out of sample or irrelevant to today's market behavior.
Chris, is this stock data, option data, futures data, or all of the above?
Yeah, this book, so
I like to maintain a really high standard of reproducibility with my work. So there's code in this book in that Python programming language, and there's data that comes with the book. And I want to make sure that when people see this book and they read it, they read the results, they read the conclusions, I want to be sure that they can download the code with the data, run the whole thing, and get the same exact results back that I wrote in the book. Because, you know, if you're learning, that's how you know you did it right. So in that spirit, what I've done, the examples in this book actually use end-of-day stock data for the past 10 years and end-of-day revenue data corresponding for the past 5 or 10 years.
Revenue on what, the individual companies?
The data on the individual companies, yes.
Okay, so and you get the revenue comes in quarterly, and so you've got the stack is closed to close.
Great. Stock is close to close. Chris, the revenue, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the book itself, which is intriguing, is it intended for the aspiring fund manager, institutional trader, or the sophisticated retail trader? What is the what's your primary target for the book?
Definitely both, and it is definitely advanced from a software development standpoint. The way that I kind of fit into this market for educational material is that I run a data science company over here in Maryland. So we do a lot of software development, and this software has to live and breathe and be really reliable, just like those big Silicon Valley companies. So I'm able to take a lot of the really cool academic researcher material, that stuff that really intense mathematics that's been coming out of the quant academic research community for the past few years, and give you something in software that is really well documented and really reliable.
This goes back, Chris, just a historical question, though. Let's not spend too much time on it. Years ago, when I was at the University of Chicago, those guys were very proud of, they were the center of, what the hell do they call it? Jeff, help me here. Center of research and security pricing.
The universe.
Yeah, the universe. They had every single stack, like tick by tick, going back to God knows when. And then Notre Dame, of all places, decided to do something else, and they've got some massive data placed there. Could you just go to these individual places? There's got to be all kinds of people now that do it. Can you just go to all these places and access this stuff, or is it easy to get, or where did you get it all, the data?
That's a really good question, and the answer is actually the reason that I had to write a second book on this topic, if you'd be interested in hearing about that.
Yeah, fair away.
So, sure. So 3 or 4 years ago, I published a really similar book that has a really similar topical theme. And when I did that, I wanted people to have up-to-date data all the time. I wanted it to work continuously, and I wanted, you know, if I published the book in 2016 and you buy the book in 2020, I wanted you to have stock data from 2020 so that it kind of felt relevant to your life. So what I did in that old book is I sent people to the Yahoo Finance API, right, to basically a URL where you can go, like finance.yahoo.com/Apple, and it would download end-of-day data for Apple. And I thought, hey, that's going to work really well because it's free data and anyone can pick it up anytime and it's going to be updated continuously, and I'm not responsible for it. That ended up being a huge problem because I would give people this magical set of 3 lines of code that would download every single stock in the S&P 500 from Yahoo Finance. So the book's been out for a few, this is 2016, the book's been out for a few months, sold a few thousand copies, and everyone's running these 3 lines of code and kind of putting a lot of load on Yahoo's servers. A few months later, they take down the service completely. They yank it. So my readers start complaining, they come back to me, they say, you know, all the code in your book is broken. It's not reproducible anymore, so I send them to the Google Finance API. 3 magic lines of code, download a ton of stocks, same story. A few months later, that gets taken down, no longer free. So we repeat this process a few times, kind of like migrating to all these different free services, until we eventually got to Quandl, and did the same thing to Quandl's free API. And so I basically concluded that I cannot rely on anyone else to keep my book up and running and to provide data for my readers. So the data that comes with this book is kind of like, it's anonymized, very realistically simulated stock data and very realistically simulated alternative data to go with those stocks. And it's all owned and hosted by me, and I will never get rid of it or take it down or revoke access to it. So hopefully, so no one else can break my book now.
What are you doing? I'm not trying to get political here, but Jeff always gets me political. How do you break something out on a day like when the Fed has been involved so much here? Is that just part of the data? You don't worry about it, or the day that the Fed wings in $2.3 trillion that nobody the day before had a clue? It just shows up as an up day, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you can only get so complex when you're working in an educational context. So, you know, nowhere in this book are we going to be processing Fed announcements in real time.
Okay.
And trying to predict what happens with them. We're focusing in this book on end-of-day data and alternative data that tries to correspond to revenue in real time.
Well, are you finding, I mean, back at the, I'll take this wrong, all the geeks at the University of Chicago, they ended up with, you couldn't, they were tick by tick. They were so anal it was scary. They said you couldn't predict the next tick from the tick beforehand. There was, you could slightly, okay, but it wouldn't, let's put it this way. If it was an uptick, this is an individual, not the end of the day, which is how crazy they were. The next tick had a slightly better chance of being an uptick, but you could never cover it if you had to pay any commissions whatsoever. So they had a little bit of a string. In other words, you could never, in every technical model they claimed, and going back on it, you could see a head and shoulders, you could see this, you could see that, but you could never actually predict by tick which is the top of the head and which isn't. What are you finding? Obviously, you're going day to day, which is totally different than what they did. So obviously, you're finding something different. What have you guys found?
Sure. That's a huge takeaway from this book. I have a statistics degree. I'm a really hardcore, staunch statistician. I'll lean on that all day. So one of the things that we set out to prove in the beginning is that, similar to the head and shoulders that you just talked about, if you're taking your basic technical indicators like a MACD or a Bollinger Band or a relative strength index, if you're taking any of those and you're trying to apply them to a bunch of stocks in the stock market at the same time, see which stock generates a signal, and trade based on those signals, you actually can outperform the stock market.
Really?
It happens very frequently, but there's a really important but here. When you outperform the stock market using something like a Bollinger Band strategy, your portfolio essentially looks like a leveraged version of the S&P 500 curve.
Okay.
So you're outperforming it on a total return basis, but not a intelligent management basis, or not on sort of an alpha basis.
Do you
so in order to prove that in this book, we compare something like the Bollinger Band strategy over a series of stocks over a long time. We compare that to the proverbial monkey throwing darts, and you get a certain result. And then we go even further, and we compare it to a monkey that throws darts that look like Bollinger Bands. And what those end up being called, they're called white noise tests, they're called bootstrap tests for any nerds out there who are familiar with this stuff. But when you do that, you can pretty easily prove that the Bollinger Band concept itself, or the MACD concept itself, it can't outperform certain types of random noise. So there's a type of random noise that's just as good.
Well, how much of it is the, and I got Jeff because I know he'd ask the same question. How much of it, back in the time that they did this, if this was in the 70s, for God's sake, or, every firm did nothing but have a bunch of analysts that worked their fannies off basically all day trying to, there weren't as many stocks, so They had a bunch of guys, you know, at IBM. And the whole idea was because all these other people were working so hard that you ended up, or no matter where you were, you ended up with like this risk-free rate. Because you couldn't really, you couldn't beat the system because all these other guys were so good at it that they were already, they had things basically as tight as the drum could be. Now, today's day and age, I mean, Charles Schwab doesn't have 50 people sitting there, or 100 or 200 like the guys used to have in the 70s, doing nothing. Could you make the case that the assumptions are different? You don't have as many people doing the quote homework on these stocks that the reasons why things would be random now might be different than then. There they thought the reasons things were random is because people were so good and it was so well priced. You're saying that maybe today it gets you to the same place, but not for maybe the same reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that opportunities have been drilled out of the stock market or optimized out of the stock market. I just think the opportunities are in a different place. And where we go in this book with regards to alternative data and machine learning is sort of the light at the end of the tunnel for quant traders. You can prove with some relatively simple experiments that if you can put together good alternative data, you can beat the market consistently.
Jeff, why don't you fire away? I've had three in a row, bud.
No, I think that's it. I think Chris, highlights what we know, and what you were referring to, Chief, is that, historically these opportunity sets have been identified, and then the flood of institutional capital and professional money, and then even retail capital into those sectors causes those opportunities to be kind of arbitraged away. I think merger arbitrage might be the simplest example of that. Once a great source of return, and then funds were built around it, and then that slowly you start to see those spreads narrow, and then people move on to a new data set. And I think that's the story. They might be less visible now, and that's why alternative data is so important in understanding that whole market, that whole idea that if you've got a way to look at the parking lots of all the Costcos around the country, you know something.
Yeah.
And that type of thinking still requires someone to figure out how to leverage that data and use it. So I guess, Chris, that's your end game, right? Do you teach people from square one, or do you have to have a basic understanding of Python in your book?
You're going to struggle if you're not somewhat familiar with Python in this book. The whole field of quant trading requires a good amount of background knowledge about computers. You can download the code, you can run it, and you can absolutely try your best to understand these key points here. But it'll be a much easier ride if you're familiar with Python.
Chris, if I, first of all, I don't know what that is, so I would not be your guy, but if I was, say, a guy like Jeff, am I going to end up trading Apple, Spiders, XLE, IBM? What do you find that the most opportunities are in?
When it comes to alternative data and opportunities to get an advantageous informational position with alternative data, I'm seeing opportunities for individual stocks with very obscure data streams. So if you and your team go through a big, arduous process of establishing an alternative data pipeline for a specific industry or a specific company, you got it, you sit there, you wait for an opportunity, you wait for that data stream to give you a signal, and then maybe it's generating like a 1 week to 3 month opportunity for you to trade.
So you're
now speaking of that, Chris, what are you seeing? I mean, this has to be an extraordinary time to be looking at those data sets. So if you're also developing those right now, you're seeing just complete dislocations with respect to logistics. You saw this oil trade coming because you saw, shipping disappearing. You're seeing traffic disappearing. You see these things coming because there's been such a fall off in travel consumption and traffic patterns that would would imply that there's just oil's not just not being consumed, right? I mean, so what's the one data set? So I saw a bunch of data sets were sent to me, or the summaries, the dashboards of them were sent to me within the last 48 hours. And the one that was striking to me was the restaurant industry, because I have an affinity with that. What stood out to you in the last couple of weeks? Which data sets in general just have such a kind of an overwhelming dislocation that it really caught your attention?
Well, you got to remember that a good alternative data set is one that other people don't have access to. So when you're asking me that question, my answer has
to
be...
Yeah, I know. You don't want to answer it. I understand.
No. I'm happy to answer it. But my answer to that question has to be one of the existing alternative data sets that we've developed at my company, right? And that might not be a lot of things. Like, we don't track oil. So one of the things that I have seen is we have a good pipeline for video game stocks. We can track this three big U.S. traded video game stocks, and we can track tons of alternative data related to those, and we do it continuously. I would be the first guy to tell you that video game stocks were a safe bet going into the recession or going into the coronavirus crash. And all the alternative data supported that. And, you know, people might sit back and say, of course, people are staying at home and playing video games. But I can tell you even better that people are spending more money on video games.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not spending for booze. You are spending for booze, just at package stores. So you got to get video games.
You can have both. They're not mutually exclusive.
Yes, yes. Chris, give us one more shot on your book, bud. Then we'll let you in. We got to go. What's the name of it?
All right.
Give us a shameless plug.
It's Algorithmic Trading with Python. It's available print only on Amazon by me, Chris Tomlin. Please search it up and let me know your thoughts. I'd love to hear. I'd love to get connected with the community over this.
Hey, Chris, this was fun. I would love to have you back. By the way, Jeff was the best person to have here with me to talk to you about it, because he knows more about it.
That was not by accident.
No, it was not by accident. Jeff, thank you as well. Maddie, thank you. SP Futures, this is the low here, down 56. NASDAQ Futures down 83. I hope your stuff said sell earlier, Chris. Sell. Hopefully later today it'll say buy, but who knows. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.